Well, Park, it's the end of the season. It's Mad Monday, so why not come to the pub to do the final hooter?
Well, yeah, you can't beat it, can you? I've got a nice pint sort of sat next to me there. You've got a nice pint, I notice, as well.
Listen, if 80% of the rugby league players can do it, so can those journalists.
Where was the fancy dress, though?
I forgot about that.
I mean, here I am, sat in my usual fancy dress. Tops and tails.
I knew we were coming to the Swan Pub in Warrington, so I thought, get a dress for the occasion.
Oh, there you go.
Smart place we come to.
Yeah, we've also managed to bring in one of our journalistic mates, haven't we?
We have, all the way from the Liverpool Echo and Radio Merseyside. It's Johnny Lawless. How are you, John?
Yeah, lovely to be here. I notice I only ever come on this when it's done in the pub. Is that because you think it's my natural environment or something?
Is that what it is? Yeah.
Great to be here, by the way, at this momentous time of the season. So, yeah, bring it on.
Just one bit of note about the history of this pub. Me and John were talking as we walked in. This used to be the pick-up point for Widnes back in the day.
Did it?
Yes.
All right, OK.
By that he means where the players used to meet, just in case you were wondering if he meant something else.
Oh, right, OK, yes. Yeah, I mean, I was sort of wondering, but we're a family show, so we won't go there.
First of all, let's talk about the action. What a weekend of rugby league we've had.
Brilliant. Brilliant. I mean, everything got sorted out, didn't it, basically? We know who's playing who in the million-pound game. In fact, shall we start with the pre-million pound game?
That torturous, wasn't it?
It might have been for you two guys, being, you know, of Widnes origins and the like. But for me, I just wanted both teams to bash each other up, being of a Lee persuasion.
Oh, of course, yeah. You'd have been looking at it from a Lee angle, hoping that Widnes and Catalans would absolutely knock the living daylights out of each other and pick up a load of injuries.
And to be fair, they did, didn't they? You know, there was players going off left, right and centre. It was really tough. It was one of those rugby league games where a game of rugby occasionally threatened to break out, I think, John.
Yeah, it was very dour, wasn't it? And from a Lee perspective, I have to say that I always fancied Lee to be favourites. Whoever came out of that game having to play Lee, I think he's going to be up against it. I think Lee had a slightly easier time against London on Friday night than Catalan had against Widnes. And they looked pretty desolate, those Catalan players, at the end. And they've got to do it all again, away from home, against the team that only beat them easily at home just a few weeks ago. So they've got it all on Catalan, I think, to get the better of Lee this week.
Just shows what it meant to all the Widnes fans. We've seen plenty of footage on social media of Widnes fans up in arms as if they won the Challenge Cup in the Grand Final, all in one.
Well, I suppose in a lot of ways it was as important as any of those occasions, wasn't it? Because it was preserving Super League status, wasn't it?
You could make an argument for it being more important. I know those are great celebratory games if you win them, but they're not a disaster if they lose them, are they? Being a Challenge Cup losing finalist isn't the worst thing that can happen to you. Being relegated from Super League is potentially an existential threat to your club, even if you're not careful. We've seen it before when teams have gone into free fall, mentioning Bradford Bulls perhaps as one such example. So yeah, it was a massive game for Widnes, and they'll be very relieved to have come through it.
Just looking at Catalans, if it does happen to them, they lose against Lee, what kind of an effect did it have in France?
Can I take that one? I reckon that they've gone about it the wrong way, Catalans, anyway, because over the last few years, they haven't tended to promote a lot of youth, have they? There's not a lot of French-born players that seem to be making that 17 every week. For me, they've gone down the route that maybe London Broncos went, where no one was from the area. It was like parachuting a team in. And they need to discover, I think, the flavour again. They need to start producing players. But I tell you what, it produces an interesting derby, doesn't it, in the Championship with Toulouse down there.
It does if they lose this week, Parky. I know that you're hoping that they will, but we'll certainly see, won't we? But I think with Catalan, their form in the qualifiers has been pretty diabolical, really, hasn't it? They started off poorly with a very close win at home to London, who I think we were expecting they'd beat them quite easily. They've lost at home to Widnes. They've lost at home to Lee by quite a distance, actually. So they've really come into this competition, although they finished 10th in Super League, and so there was two teams below them. I think going into the competition, they were the worst Super League team in terms of how they were travelling, in terms of form in it, and that's proved to be the case, I think, so far.
I think with the way that Steve McNamara's gone about his business as well, it doesn't excite those Catalans fans, just the rugby that they're playing. I mean, you mentioned the dour, but that's not just the one game that they played. It's every single game during this playoff period, isn't it?
They seem to be playing with a lot of fear, don't they? But I'm seeing that a lot in not just Catalan, but saw a bit of it in Widnes, and I think a bit of it in Lee at times in this competition. Even Hull KR, by the way, have sort of dogged their way through this competition, haven't they? I think the points difference is about less than +10. So they've really eked out results Everyone is so nervous because that's what this competition engenders. It engenders that jeopardy and that fear of losing rather than that desire to go out and grasp a game and win it. I think if one of the two teams on Saturday, Catalan and Lee, one of them can actually summon up the courage to go out there and win it, they'll steal a march on the other one.
Just looking at that thing about Catalans, you mentioned the fact he's lost the flair a little bit. You think back to how successful he used to be. It's when Trent Robinson was the coach. They had loads of French guys in there, didn't they? Whereas now, has there any French people in that team?
Well, that's the point that I was making. You know, it's almost like a team's been parachuted in there. They've jettisoned some of the guys that have served them well over the years, lads like Elwar Pelissier, Anthony Maria at Lee. You look at Navarrete had to go. I know he's back there on loan, but he went out to Wigan. Morgan Escarre went over to Wigan as well. And these are the lads that really you'd be expecting him to keep hold of. Another one, William Bartow, been in great form for London Broncos. These are lads that you'd be expecting them to build a team out of, not letting go out. And it's just, I don't know what the thinking is behind that.
Yeah, things are clearly not going well. There might be stuff behind the scenes there that we're not privy to that are not going right. Maybe the squad isn't happy together or what have you. I don't know. I'm purely speculating. What I want to know is Catalan going out of Super League, which is a possibility this weekend? Is that a good idea for the game, that Catalan are out of Super League? It's not a good idea for Catalan. Probably not a good idea for French Rugby League. Is it a good idea for Super League even? I'm not sure it is really, but the rules are the rules, and for the integrity of the competition, we have to obey the rules.
I'm interested in actually how you said that, John. Just your opinion on that, really, you know, with regards to, is it good for the game? Do you think that they should be exempt from relegation then in that case? Or?
Not now. Not at the 11th hour. If you say this competition is for promotion and relegation, it's a matter of integrity and keeping your word that it has to be for promotion and relegation. But yeah, I would prefer a system where a club like Catalan, who is an expansion club, is exempted from relegation. Don't forget, once upon a time they were, and they took advantage of that, and I think Widnes Vikings were relegated despite finishing above Catalan in the table. I think if we decide, and it's not my decision to make, but the powers that be might think along these lines, and if I was in their shoes I might think along these lines, if we decide that Catalan, because of their unique nature, they're the only French side in this competition, they are what makes the European Super League the European Super League, because of that someone might consider that they are integral to the competition and we can't have them relegated. But of course, we can't really have the qualifiers then, can we? So we're going to have to think up a whole new system to decide who's plays in Super League.
Just as long as it's not spreadsheet rugby again. I hated that for all those years. It put a glass ceiling on all the progressive clubs in the Championship and meant that they couldn't get up. You know, so for example, I'm not thinking Lee, I'm thinking Featherstone. Featherstone were the big losers, really, of that entire situation when we had licensing, because arguably on the field, they were well equipped for going into Super League at the time.
Just looking at the Championship for next season, if Catalans do go down, it's going to be hard for them to get back up, isn't it? Because you're going to have Toulouse in there, you're going to have Toronto. So
you definitely need to be renewing your passport, don't you, if you're going in the Championship potentially next year?
Well, you say it's going to be hard to get back up. We're not actually completely sure of how the league is going to be constituted in 2019, are we? We're going to be told, apparently, before 2018. But if we say we're going back to some kind of semi-licensing system for 2019, what does that do to the 2018 season? What do the qualifiers mean in 2018 if we say are going back to a licensing system or some kind of hybrid system for 2019? Doesn't that mean the 2018 season is a bit pointless in some regards?
It's almost like I can almost hear the digging up of goalposts even now, to be honest, at Redhall.
It's just a matter of giving out all those shields, isn't it? Because they've still got a bag full of them somewhere.
It seems that way, doesn't it? You know, I mean, like, I was at the League One Shield final on Sunday between Hunslet and London Scholars. Really enjoyed the experience, by the way, of the South Leeds Stadium, or I think it's the Albert Goldthorpe Stadium it's being called these days. And it was a good little game, to be honest. Really enjoyed it. Full-blooded, just what you want in a final. And nice to see London Scholars making progress, because for many years you kind of looked at it and thought every time London Scholars took the field, if you were playing against them, you'd win by 40, 50 points.
It's good that teams have got something meaningful to play for below the Super League level. I'm sure to all those lads playing in that final, it may not have had the media coverage that a grand final gets, for example, or a Challenge Cup final. But I don't doubt for a second, and you were there, Parky, so you could tell us, I don't doubt for a second that to those lads playing in that game, that was their grand final, that was their Challenge Cup final. So to them, at that moment in time, and the fans of those clubs at that moment in time, that is their big day, and we need to foster that.
The celebrations at the end, they match anything that you'd see anywhere else. There was George Flanagan once upon a time at Batley in Bradford, dancing round with the shield on top of his head and all this type of business. So, you know, anybody that says that these trophies don't mean anything, he's talking rubbish, basically.
It's great to see a famous old club like Hornsey get some silverware and get some rewards.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, over the last couple of years, they've reinvented themselves, haven't they? They're just Hunslet this year. They've been Hunslet Hawks for many years before. They're trying to re-identify with the local area. They've got some young players that came from Leeds, for example, that have been stepping out of the academy, for Shearer Academy graduates, if you like, who's done a real good job. And they've got a real good coach there in Gary Thornton, who you know, fosters a lot of young talent, and we're going to hear from him right now. Delighted to be joined by Gary Thornton. Gary, your thoughts? It's been a really good win, that. I thought that they were particularly dogged, and you have to dig in at times.
Yes, I keep saying that, I'll repeat myself. You know, London Scholars are a good team. You know, they don't go away. They're always in the game. They never, you know, you need to get two or three scores away from them for it to be comfortable, because they don't go away, and that was the case again today. But I was really pleased with the second half. You know, to nil them, I thought was an excellent effort from us, and I thought we could have been a bit more clinical with the ball, but that said, you know, we did what we had to do and won the game. And as I said, defensively, I thought second half we were excellent.
Where does that take you with regards to the development of your side? Because, you know, it looks like it could be an exciting journey here, honestly. There's a lot of young players at your disposal.
I hope so, yeah. There are some young players here, and we've got to, you know, give them an environment to develop in, and that's going to be key next year. I think we are short on a little bit of experience. We probably do need to bring some experienced players in to help them. But yeah, I'm, you know, the squad that we've got is developing and will be better for next season. I think for this year's experience, you know, Sanderson and Flynn, who have both come out of academy football, will be much better next year, having had this experience. So I'm quite excited about things. You know, we're going to try and strengthen the club and the side, and do things a little bit better probably next year than they were this year. We've got a lot of ways to improve on and off the field, and you know, that's up to me to get that right, so that's what I'll be doing.
I know it's always easier from a media point of view to like point at halfback and say, oh, he's having a good game. I thought that Joe Sanderson particularly stood up in this one.
Yeah, and Joe's one of the players that we've identified, as I've mentioned. He's 19 years old, straight out of academy football, and he's going to get better. Play at games like this where there's a little bit of pressure on, because we were a bit nervous first half, but there's pressure on everybody today because it's a final. But games like this will only add to his experience and to stand him in good stead, and I think he'll grow and get better for it. So yeah, it's not ideal. We didn't want to be in this situation about playing this Shield final, you know, but we wanted to be in the top 8 challenging for promotion. But it is what it is, and I think what we've done is turn a real negative situation into a positive, and that's not, that was our very minimum, was to try and win this game, win this cup, and then use it as a springboard for next year.
Also as well, at the other end of the scale, you know, George Flanagan, he at times was dynamic as well. He couldn't contain him to play the ball, could he?
Well, that's typical George Flanagan. I mean, he's had to do 80 minutes today because Jack Lee's out of the game with a bicep injury, so George has had to do some big minutes over the last few weeks. So yeah, he's done 80 minutes, and you know what you get with George. He's just outstanding in what he does, and he gels the team together. He's a great captain, a great leader, and I think he was outstanding today, and wears his heart on his sleeve, plays that way, and he's led his team around the park today really well. Gets involved sometimes when he shouldn't do, but that's the position he's in. Like I said, he's a wholehearted player and a wholehearted lad, and I think he epitomises what we're trying to bring to the squad, really.
Obviously, happy and ecstatic that they got the job done.
Yeah, well, to be fair, I mean, he was one of these where he said they didn't want to be in the competition, but they've gone and done the job, they've got it won, and like you were saying, there, a lot of young players, he's looking to get maybe a bit more experience for them next season.
That's going to be a challenge for them, to try and get out of League One back into the Championship.
I think there's a good scramble, isn't there, between a number of clubs. I mean, just before we went on, we were talking about that amazing semi-final in Cumbria, weren't we, between Whitehaven and York.
I believe for 105 minutes.
105 minutes. I saw a 100-minute game once, but I don't think it's been any longer than that.
Part-time players as well. Super League guys will be furious about
do you
play
do you
one.
Get any extra substitutions if you go into extra time? I think that used to be the rule.
It used to be the rule.
But if you didn't, I wasn't at that game at the weekend, but if you didn't get extra substitutions, there will have been some tired bodies on the field, I bet, by the end of 105 minutes.
Whitehaven winning that game, by the way, 21-20, to set up what is going to be a cracker of a Cumbrian derby to decide the promotion place.
I mean, to be fair, any other year but when Toronto's entered League One, we'd be talking about Barrow having an outstanding season. They've only lost twice, I think it is, themselves all year. And they've played some tremendous rugby. They'll fancy themselves as favourites, won't they?
You've got to think so, haven't you? Because, as you say, they've been great this year. Toronto, a full-time team in a part-time league this year, a very part-time league, let's be honest, in some cases. So I think you'd have been a fool not to back Toronto to come out on top of the pile in that particular competition. But well done to Barrow for the season they've had. And I've got a bit of a soft spot for Barrow, actually, having been there many times over many years, and I'm pleased to see him doing well.
I know all the talk's been about Tony Smith leaving Warrington at the end of the season, but this week as well, it's been announced that Dave Clark's leaving Workington.
Yeah, and again, it's a bit of a strange one, really, isn't it? You know, he's only been there 12 months, but the board there has spoke very nicely about him and the fact of the work that he's done up there. I know through having spoken with Dave in the past...
He is Mr. Cumbria, isn't he?
He is Mr. Cumbria, yeah. He's so dedicated, played for Barrow for many years, always seemed to be the guy that they turned to whenever they got rid of coaches. He's had a year of it up at Workington where maybe some things haven't quite gone right for him, but he's still managed to get a team out on the park. The community engagement's good there. And he leaves them in a much better place than what he found them in.
Just looking at that derby game, then, who's going to win it?
Oh, well, I mean, I'd like to talk a little bit more about Whitehaven, to be honest. I mean, they've got the youngest professional coach in the game there, haven't they, in Foster, who previously played at St Helens. He's played half of the games in the front row. He's deciding all the decisions of where they're going and what sort of training regimes that they're doing there. And he's done a tremendous job on a very limited budget.
They're going to have heavy legs, though, aren't they, after that effort?
You would think so. You would think so. But, you know, stranger things have happened. I mean, I was tipping in the build-up to that game. I thought that York wouldn't be in with the shot. So for them to get to 104 minutes and be level with Whitehaven just shows that you can't always rely on that. And my tips are rubbish.
I think Whitehaven, a bit like Catalan this week, are going to struggle to get up for it after that game. You know, it's not just the physical energy. I know 105 minutes, is, as we've said, is a long time to play a rugby league match. It's the emotional energy that you put into that game. You've got to raise yourself again. You've got to raise your spirits again for another crack at another massive game. And that's going to be difficult for Whitehaven this week and for Catalan Dragons in the £1 million game.
Talking about big games, and I know that Sheffield Eagles have qualified for the Championship Shield final. They've got to go to Toulouse, a third visit this season to France.
And they had a part-time club as well, so they're not happy about the journey as well, are they?
It is what it is, though, isn't it? We've accepted Toulouse into that competition, and you have to put up with it. Don't forget, by the way, people are always moaning about going to Catalan and going to Toulouse, and I dare say some might be moaning about going to Toronto now. Don't forget, they've got to come the other way, these teams. Toulouse and Catalan have got to come to England every other week, so when the English players are moaning, if some of them are, about it, think what about the lads coming from France? They're doing it every other week. We're mourning, or some of our lads are mourning, English lads are mourning, about going it two or three times a season. They're doing it all the time.
The idea of Toulouse is hopefully get promoted out of the Championship. Do you think they'll be a bit disappointed to be in the game where they find themselves?
I think they will be, to be honest, yeah, because you look at their squad, again, they've got a lot of French players there. Okay, they've got the occasional overseas player. I wonder whether they'll look at this thinking we've underperformed a little bit here, or whether there's a bit more pressure maybe on the coach Sylvain Houlez. What do you think?
At the start of the season, they were going good, weren't they, at the start of the season, and I was fancying them to make the top four in the Championship and therefore make the qualifiers. I don't think they'd have had the staying power or the class, quite frankly, to have troubled too many Super League sides, I'll say that. But yeah, I think they'll be a bit disappointed with it overall. Again, I'm not sure about French clubs, Canadian clubs, a Canadian club in the Championship. Is that the long-term future for them? Is that doing the French game any good? Is it doing our game any good? I think we either needed to decide that those clubs are going to enhance Super League, or maybe they'd be better off playing in France.
You were at Leeds for that final. You heard from the winner, Gary Fawns, and let's hear from the loser. It is Jermaine Coleman.
Well, Jermaine Coleman, first of all, commiserations. Your thoughts on the game today?
Disappointment, really. I thought, you know, we put a lot of effort into that game and a lot of effort over the back end of the season. I think just disappointment that we didn't come up here and give ourselves a good account. I think we made too many errors and gave away too many penalties. And, you know, again, credit to Hunslet for what they did and the pressure that put on us. And, you know, unfortunately, our boys just weren't able to deal with that. But it's a learning curve for us. We're a fairly young team and an inexperienced team when it comes to playing rugby league. So, you know, we'll use this definitely as a springboard into next year and look at how we competed in the games this back end of this season and you know how we fell away over these two games when we was under a little bit more pressure. So, as I say, it's a little bit of a cliche, but you probably learn more when you lose than when you win. So, you know, we'll review the game and we'll have a look at it. And it's disappointing for the boys to finish the season on a loss. But, you know, we got ourselves to a final, which, you know, if we'd have been offered that at the split, we'd have definitely accepted. So, disappointment, but also proud of the effort and the commitment that the players have shown right from November.
You mentioned about the development of the side. I mean, that's something that certainly since you've come on board, you've seen this side morph into a real beast, you know, because there would have been a time possibly when it got 26-12, they would have folded, but there was no hint of that, was there?
Yeah, very much so. You know, we pride ourselves on our effort, and as you said, since I've come in, we've been a team that's been competitive, and, you know, we managed to get ourselves in the eights last year and was, you know, extremely disappointed that we didn't do the same this year. But similar to what Gary said, you know, in his interview last week, once we found ourselves in this position, we definitely set ourselves a target of getting to a final and winning a final. And, you know, we achieved 50% of that. So we've got to take the positives out of the situation. And, you know, in every situation there'll be negatives, there'll be things that we need to fix up, but it's the positives that we need to focus on just to continue to develop. And as you said, in times gone by, the London Scholars team would have probably folded at 20 points, and, you know, on the back end of that first early try in the second half, we could have capitulated, but we showed a lot of effort and we dug in. And again, you know, if you give any team that amount of possession and don't build any pressure, then they're going to put points on you. And I think the score's a little bit of an unfair reflection on the game, but, you know, credit to Hunter and to Gary and his players and what they managed to do to us today.
Overall, when you look at it, it's been a good season for you. It's
been a good second half of the season. I think we started the season fairly well, and, you know, we got a lot of injuries at the start of the season. It really hindered our progress. I mean, I think the first 12 games we had a different halfback partnership every game, and, you know, we only had two players that started every game at the start of the season, so we really struggled to sort of build some combinations and build some momentum. And I think the second half of the season, I think since we played Huntsford at home and we beat them in the first half of the season, I think we've started to get some momentum together and started to get some combinations together, and we've had a pretty settled team, give or take a couple of players, and I think that's really helped us. You know, the important thing for us now is to try and recruit and build on that and make sure we try and keep as much of this squad together as possible. And, you know, our players that are there that are very young and inexperienced in terms of rugby league terms, you know, they'll take a lot from that and they'll learn a lot from what's happened over the last couple of weeks. And, you know, for many of them, that would have been their first situation of playing a final and playing in a tough game, especially week to week. So, you know, we'll learn from that and we'll move on.
We said that in FM then.
We did. We certainly did. Jermaine Coleman, still enthusiastic about the game.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, chatting to him afterwards, although he was disappointed, he was very proud of the journey that East London Scholars boys have gone on over the course of the season. And as you heard there, I sort of said, there was times in the past when you'd come up against the Scholars side and you'd be thinking, well, they're going to be conceding lots and lots of points. And to be fair, they were very, very competitive throughout and have been through all the season.
What do you think the future of League One's going to be? Because we've already got the rumour of a possible merger between Oxford and Gloucester.
Yeah, it's disappointing that, isn't it? But I suppose in a way, I would still like to see it work as a bit of a development league. So whether that means expanding the Championship to feature more teams in the Championship, obviously a few years ago when they decided that they'd reduce the numbers in the Championship, they dropped maybe two or three clubs that were really at the time doing well in the Championship, because the league table would say suggest otherwise, but they could have been bigger players than where they are in the rugby league circles at the moment. I think that when you've got progressive clubs like Manchester Rangers who are looking at stepping forward, they need somewhere to go. You can't keep them playing in the Barley Leagues forever, can you? So I would like to see that more of a development league, with perhaps moving the rest up.
It's hard to believe 20 years later we're on about talking about a possible merger of two clubs.
When I talk about mergers in rugby league, I'm always reminded of the famous Sheffield Huddersfield merger and the Hull Gateshead mergers. Were any of those, in common sense terms, really mergers? Didn't one club basically subsume the other club?
They were takeovers, really,
yeah,
weren't they?
It was Hull and it was Huddersfield, wasn't it? And then as quick as you like, Sheffield and Gateshead appear down the league somewhere in a different guise. So hope that that's not the case with the Oxford and Gloucester murder. Murder? Hey, Freud, come on in.
It may well be for those fans who watch those clubs.
Sigmund Freud is with us this evening. But I hope that's more of a development thing for both teams, because if it's just one team subsuming the other, what it really means is that we're losing one, doesn't it?
Rumoured to be going Bristol as well.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, again, it just almost seems like rugby league development by drawing pin and a big AA map, doesn't it?
Is that finally the Rugby League World Cup of 2013 lasting legacy finally coming through at Bristol?
Well, you know, it's only taken 4 years. We've had the legacy in Wales, haven't they? Where
yes.
they had that team back in 96 and then had to wait until, what, the mid-2000s before a team emerged in Wales. Maybe this is all part of the Rugby League development dream.
Yeah, I don't think we should get too cynical about it, because I'm just delighted that people are playing Rugby League wherever they're playing it. They may be playing it at a lower level than many of us are used to watching week in, week out, but hopefully there's some development work going on in these areas, and I want them to survive and prosper and hopefully have a prosperous future.
Yeah, one thing that it has done, it's given extra opportunities for players, so it has meant that maybe a more promising amateur players end up progressing to the professional ranks where they should do.
Thinking about the Rugby League World Cup, by the way, did you see those photos of the draw in Papua New Guinea? 30,000 people turned up to watch it. To see the trophy.
Not bad, is it? Not bad, 30,000.
Did they charge him a ticket money?
There'd be some games to go to, those would be, wouldn't we, in the World Cup, the Papua New Guinea games. I wouldn't mind going. I've never been to Papua New Guinea, and I don't know if I ever will, but I wouldn't mind going to a rugby league game there, I have to say.
I spoke to Ray French a few times about it. He said when he used to go over there many years ago, people would walk out the jungle for 3 days just to get to the match.
Well, they like that in Lee. Have you seen the queues outside for that £1 million match?
I was impressed with that, actually.
The people in Papua New Guinea are better dressed than those in Lee, generally speaking.
Definitely got a better diet, anyway.
What's wrong with pasties?
Warrington played their last game of the season against Hokkinson Rovers, came up with a win eventually, and it was the very last game for Tony Smith as Warrington head coach.
Yeah, it's kind of like sad. It's
weird,
it's the end of an era, isn't it?
9 years.
9 years is a heck of a long time to stop at one club. You know, I've spoken to a number of coaches that, and they know that you have a certain shelf life as a coach. Had Tony reached that stage with Warrington, they decided that they had.
It would seem so, yeah. Obviously, this season has had a massive effect, hasn't it? No one expects Warrington, a well-resourced club, who expect to be challenging for trophies, not challenging, you know, fighting to stay in Super League through the qualifiers. So the results of this season will have had an effect. Tony said to me recently that he felt that his team hadn't played that much different than last year, just that they've lost out in a lot of close games and what have you. But he didn't feel, his opinion was that their form, you know, wasn't that bad this year. But after 9 years, perhaps it's time to move on. Warrington, a new face. Players get stale with the same coach, you know what I mean, and perhaps the messages he's giving them become a little bit old hat for the players that are there. And maybe that's the case with Warrington. I want to say one thing about Tony, by the way, is that one of the things I've liked about his tenure at Warrington is that when you go into a press conference after a match, usually when you hear the losing coach especially speak, you tend to wonder, was this fella at the same match that I've just watched? Mm. Because there's always that little bit of bitterness and, you know, it was the ref that did it and we had this bit of bad luck and why don't they change these rules and what have you. Even if it's only hinted at, Tony Smith usually gives a very honest assessment of what's gone on the field. He's the one coach that you can go into the after-match press conference and think, yeah, he was watching the same thing I was watching.
Be interesting to see who's going to be the next Warrington coach. Michael Maguire, rumoured to have already turned it down. David Fern is up there in the running. Steve Price is another name being mentioned.
I've heard Dean Pay as well.
I've not heard that one myself.
It looks like it's going to be an Australian anyway, doesn't
yes.
it? None of us have mentioned an English person there, so it looks like it's going to be an Australian, which, you know, Warrington must think that's the way to go, and you can't blame him for that. If it works out for him next season, everyone will agree that it was the way to go.
Watch the spaces, they say. Right, here's the Family Heater podcast. We are talking rugby league. We're in the Swan Pub, which is quite a nice little venue for our little show. It is Mad Monday. We're on the road. Why not?
Exactly.
But today we were at the Dream Team launch, and Park, you've got the team.
Yes, the Dream Team, as announced, was Zach Hardacre at fullback, a backline of Greg Eden, Michael Shenton, Mark Percival and Maher Fanua. At halfback, Albert Kelly and Luke Gale. Front row of Grant Millington, Matt Parcell, Sebastian Ikehifo, Ben Murdoch-Masilla, Mike McMeekin and Sean O'Loughlin.
I'm glad you said the Huddersfield player, by the way.
Yeah, well, I've been practising.
Is that how you got round?
That is actually how you
say it. In one take, I'm impressed.
In one take as well, yeah. That's like, it's because you're working with a pro.
Yeah, we've got Johnny Lawless with us.
Good team, that. Good team.
I don't think you'd be able to fit that under a salary cap.
Probably not. I don't know. There's some creative accountants out there who might give that a whirl. But a good team, very good team. I had about nine of those, I think, in the team that I selected. And but I wouldn't really argue even with the ones that argue with me.
Hang on, John. You said that you'd actually got a selection in this.
Yeah, I got a selection in it, yeah.
I missed out on that.
I never got that email as well.
Right, okay.
Oh, I can feel a snotty memo coming on here.
No, snotty memos, no snotty memos. So at risk of boring everybody that's listening in, how did that go about then? What would you do? Did you just get an email and you just sort of said, well, here we go, that's who I think.
They sent you a template, and in each position, you had to pick your first, second and third choice for the best player, basically through the regular season. 5 points for your best player, 3 points for your second best, and 1 point for your third best. And then I presume once the RFL get all the results in, they tot them all up, and we end up with the dream team. So that's basically how it works. It's journalists who do it, but it's the rugby league tot it up, and we end up with the team that was announced today. And as I said, very good team it is too.
Do you think there might be a few guys sat there looking at that team, thinking, "Hang on, where's my name? How come I'm not in it?"
Well, no, when I was like looking at it, I thought Alex Walmsley would have been a shoo-in because he's the top meter maker in the whole of Super League. He never fails to make an impact. He is the best prop forward. He's the most dynamic go-forward player that we have in this country. And then I'm looking at Ben Murdoch-Masilla. Was that just a romantic vision based on earlier form by Salford?
I picked him.
Did you?
I picked Ben Murdoch-Masilla. I think
he's done nothing for the last 8 weeks, John.
I think he's had a cracking season. Hey, don't forget, it's meant to be mainly based on the first 23 rounds. If his form has dipped a bit in the last 7 weeks, that doesn't count as heavily as what he did in the first 23 rounds. But I thought he was a real strike player for Salford, and please, Salford got a player in it, and I personally thought he deserved it.
If that's the case, then why is Michael Shenton there? Surely it should be Jake Webster.
Well, Jake Webster was my pick for the Shenton position. I had Shenton and Percival in the centres. No, I didn't. I had Webster and Percival in the centres. Shenton would have missed out in my team. But it's all opinions, isn't it? And we don't know the full point scores at the end of the day. Like you, Dave, I had Walmsley in my selection. I didn't have Ikahihifo in. I think I kind of forgot about him. I don't think I've seen as much as Huddersfield. It's not an exact science, this, you know what I mean? We're all only human beings, but when I have seen him play, he's been very impressive, and the reports I've read have been very impressive. But as I say, Walmsley was my one of my prop picks.
One player who might have a bit of an argument to be in there has got to be Paul McShane.
He was in my team, I have to say. Parcells had a good year, though, for Leeds, hasn't he? And he's the only Leeds player in it. This year, six Castleford players, by the way. I think I had seven in my pick, but six Castleford players. I think we can all understand that, can't we? Look at the league table. That tells you why there's six Castleford players in it. Two from Hull, and then no one else with more than one player in the team. So spread about a bit, other than the Castleford. Castleford have supplied half. Everyone else has supplied the other half.
Sadly for us, three, no Lee or Widnes players, though.
If you're looking at it, I would have picked Hep Cahill above Sean O'Loughlin in fairness, but maybe that's because I've seen a heck of a lot more of Hep Cahill than I have Sean O'Loughlin.
A hep of a lot more, you mean?
A hep of a lot more,
a hep
even,
of a lot
yeah.
more. On my 5-3-1, I had Hep Cahill down for me 1 point, but I did pick Sean O'Loughlin, I have to say, because I just think, although he misses a number of games, as we know, he's just a quality player and offers something different at loose forward than most do these days.
I have to admit, I would have had Liam Farrell in my second row as well, because consistently you look at Wigan's stats, and I know I said about spreadsheet rugby league before, but these are the spreadsheets I like. The metres made, the breaks, the tackles, all that palaver. And for me, I don't think there's a better second row than him in the comp for that.
He's a fantastic workman-like player, isn't he? Murdoch-Masilla's more your strike player. He's your go-to man when you're in the opposition 20 and you can get him running at perhaps a half-back or something like that. Mike McMeekin was the other second rower. It picked in the actual dream team. It's good to see someone like that coming through, isn't it? A lad who's come through the London system and has done superbly, really, for Castleford this year. A big unit and probably going to be on the plane to Australia, I imagine.
A half-back's Albert Kelly and I caught up with him right after the announcement.
Albert Kelly, let's go back to the start of the season. When you swapped East Hull for West Hull, what's your thoughts at that point?
I was just wanted to get back out there and enjoy my football again. Yeah.
And have you found the move? Did the Hull fans accept you coming from the east side of Hull?
Yeah, I spoke to a few of the boys that did it, like Scott Taylor and Liam Watson. That was just really wasn't bust, to be honest. I think I just wanted to get back out there and enjoy my football again, and just pretty much let the football speak.
Performances suggest that has been the case. Chance Cup winner, now you're in the dream team as well, and the business is not done just yet.
I didn't really expect this. I think this is the first for me today, and I can tick it off the box now. There's some tremendous plays in here, we still got a little bit to go.
As the cup holders, is there a bit more pressure on you?
No, you're just bringing it up now. We still got a job at hand, and we need to turn up for this big game. We need a big game performance.
Yeah, you produced that in the Challenge Cup. Do you think that will pay dividends on Friday night?
We'll have our plans. Sometimes plans are out the window, and we just need to turn up and focus on ourselves, and going into this big game, and we have the experience in the pack, and I think we got the leaders as well to bring us home. So I think it's going to be a very tough game.
Leads of the opposition, what do you make of them?
Very tough team, expansive football, very well coached.
You're more than happy and content then?
I think we just really focus on ourselves, and we play the way we expect to play, and it'll be a very tough game.
Had a great season, Albert Kelly, hasn't he?
He has, yeah. He offers that something that not a lot of teams can prepare for, really. He's got that bit of will the wisp about him, hasn't it?
Well, we're calling it the dream team. Maybe it should be, the Fleur team. He'd be in your Fleur team, wouldn't he? He's not a percentage player. They've got a nice blend there at Hull, haven't they? They've got Mark Sneed, who does all the bits and pieces and runs the kicking game and what have you. Kelly is the one who adds the stuff that you can't teach, really, isn't he? He makes the break from nothing. He scores the try from nothing. And that's what excites people and what puts bums on seats. So he was in my pick for that very reason. He's just one of those players who gets you out your seat.
I think you're a brave boy when you're swapping East Hull for West Hull, though.
Oh, very much so, yeah. It's like crossing the Great Divide, isn't it?
Yes.
He's done tremendous.
Yeah, I think he had to swim the River Hull to actually get it to go there. They make you swim if you're going from one team to the other.
I noticed today he dyed his hair.
Had he?
Yeah.
Are you sure about that?
Yeah, it was red.
Was it?
Yeah.
He had that last week, though.
Did he have it last week?
Yeah.
Okay.
You obviously didn't see him last weekend. I don't know. Maybe he's just a bit of both, black and white and red and white.
Black and white and red all over, as he used to say about the newspaper business.
There was a representative from St. Helens on that team as well, and I caught up with Matt Percival. Matt Percival in the dream team for 2017. That must be like a dream come true, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely, mate. It's always nice to get that recognition at the end of the year, and obviously to get that this year, it's been nice. It's been an up-down season as a team, but I feel like it's just one of them. We've been working hard for each other, and to get the recognition of getting in the team, it's a nice feeling, yeah.
It's been quite a week for you, 100 appearances, dream team appearance. You'll be looking to end it now with a win to get to Old Trafford.
Yeah, like I said, obviously I've made my 100th on Friday against Salford. That was good as well, obviously. When you come through your dream of making 100 appearances for any club, and to do it for St. Helens, I was pretty proud of that. And obviously, like you said, being picked into this, I've never done it before, so it's nice to get the recognition, like you said. And on Thursday night, it's probably the biggest game of our year. We've worked hard for the last 12 weeks to get to this point, to get to the semi-final and give ourselves a chance, and hopefully we can do that with a win and get to the final.
It could be a tough game against Casper, though.
Oh, yeah, massive. They've been the best team all year, and they do everything well consistently, and it's going to be a tough one. You can score points for fun as well, so I think defensively you have to be at your very best. There's no time for excuses. You have to be at your best, and hopefully we can do that Thursday night.
You mentioned you have played 100 games. Do you feel you are now established within Super League?
Obviously there's a lot way to go. Yeah, I've got a lot to improve on, but I'm slowly starting to establish myself. Obviously, like you said, playing more games, and and getting out there. So yeah, I'm really looking forward to just the future with Saints, and just keep going, and hopefully we can win as much trophies as we can.
Are you a fan of the new gaffer?
Yeah, mate, he's brilliant. He's just brought me back, like, getting the simple things doing right. I think we all at the season we're all guilty of trying too hard but not doing the right things, and I think we've all just stripped the game down and playing the game simple as it is, and all the good stuff comes off the back of that. And it's just got us doing that really well, working hard for each other. And then if you're working hard for each other, you're always going to be there and thereabouts. And he brings that, Justin, and he's a quality bloke as well, so it's nice to have him around.
Next season, not done and dusted just yet, but have you got an eye on playing for Australia maybe?
Obviously, yeah, it's in the back of the mind, and you want to be there and represent your country. It's every lad's dream who plays rugby to represent your country. And I feel obviously there's a lot to do yet for Saints. Obviously we've got this big semi-final Thursday, and I just want to focus on that for now, and then if I get picked, it'll be a great achievement which I'll be really proud of, but obviously there's just a lot to focus on now as well.
Percy, probably one of the informed centres in the league, isn't he?
I'd agree with you. Yeah, I think he's been brilliant actually this season. He's definitely been the go-to man for St Helens when they've been in a bit of a fix, and for me his form just is getting better and better.
He had something different, doesn't he, when he gets the ball. He likes to run cross field quite a bit, which some people might frown on, but he's looking for that gap, isn't he? And he often finds it, and he could be a key man in the Super League semi-finals this week when Castleford take on St Helens.
What a game that's going to be.
Oh, it could be tremendous, couldn't it? I mean, just a few weeks ago, St Helens were beating Cass, weren't they, in their own backyard? When I know they've had a massive beating at the hands of them in the cup, but they turn the tables, and they're going to have to call upon that, aren't they, later this week?
They are. Cass, there's part of me that just wants Cass to get to the grand final, simply because I think they kind of deserve it. I know that's not how the system works. You have to win it in a semi-final in order to get to the grand final. But there's a big part of me that thinks that Cass deserved that stage. Don't forget, there'll be a new name on the grand final stage as well. They've never played in a grand final before. And I would love to see Cass that get there in many ways, even though, you know, there's a part of me, particularly the financial part of me, because I've got a bit of money on Saints, that would like to see Saints get there. But for Cass, it would be, you know, a partial reward at least for the fantastic season they've had.
Let's hear from Darryl Powell.
Big game, isn't it? We all know that. We know what's at stake. But having said that, you've got to do what you've been doing all year. You know, that's the plan, that's the key. Is be as efficient as you have in big games, as you have been when the pressure's not on so much. It's a big game for us. Challenges there. Saints are playing well and winning games consistently. Some of the better players are on fire. So we've got to be able to manage all of that and deliver our own outstanding performance that gets us what we want.
Do you think the full house at the Jungle will help the situation on the night?
Well, it always helps, doesn't it? I mean, we're at home. You know, if you had a choice, you'd be at home. If Saints had a choice, they'd be at home. So, we want our supporters to get behind us. They've been superb all year. We want to treat them to something special, which is a grand final appearance. And it's going to be difficult, but, you know, when you get to this point in the season, it should be. It should be tough. It should really challenge you. The best teams... The best teams win these games, and that's what we want to become. We are the best team consistently whenever we challenge, so we're looking forward to it.
We're at the Dream Team launch. How proud of a club to see so many representatives in the Dream Team?
Yeah, six boys in there. It's awesome. I think it says a lot about the club. It says a lot about the individual players, and it says a lot about the players who haven't got here, because, you know, these boys need support. They need to be able to deliver what they're good at, and everybody else helps them to do that. And I think it says a bit about the coach and the staff being able to support these boys to deliver the performances that they have. So, you know, we've had a big year, and this is just one of those moments that caps it off, to see so many individual players being rewarded.
Plus as well, you've got two representatives for the Man of Steel as well.
Yeah, obviously Zach and Luke Gale both had unbelievable seasons. You know, Zach's first year with us, done some special things. Gailey's been growing as a player over the last few years and been enormous again this year. So, delighted for those two. Obviously, from my perspective, love to see one of those two to win it. But looking forward to seeing them on the night and see who's been good enough to pick it up. Obviously, Albert Kelly's had an awesome year for all as well.
Been a great season for Castleford, I'm sure, if they do get the job done. They'll be giving you the keys to the town, won't they?
I hope so. I don't know where it gets me into, but look, it's been a pleasure and a privilege to be involved at Castleford over the last 4.5 years, and we've got to a point now where we're challenging. We're challenging to play in the biggest games that the competition gives you, and this is one opportunity that we don't want to pass up.
Very confident that they can get the job done, but they've got to prove they can win the big games.
I suppose, have they?
Yeah, because you remember when they won the league leaders shield, they were saying after the games how nervous they were.
Yeah, I mean, but we've thrown this at them constantly over the season. The fact that they got beat by Hull in the Challenge Cup, and they recovered. So I think they can perform anyway.
Trust me, they won't recover if they lose this week, because that's it. So I take Adrian's point. It will seem like a bit of a shame if they bow out at the semi-final stage this week, because they've won the League Leaders' Shield by a country mile. What is it, 12 points or something like that? 10, 12 points. And but the real prize, the big prize, is winning the Super League Grand Final at Old Trafford on October the 7th. And it will be a shame for Castleford if they don't at least make that final.
All the news about whether Luke Gale will play just shows he's a tough old cookie, because he might be playing.
Wow, unbelievable.
He's a tough lad. I think he's a shoe-in for Man of Steel, by the way. He's on the three-man shortlist for Man of Steel, isn't he? If he doesn't win it, I think we need to have a steward's inquiry, to be honest with you, because I just love watching him play. He's got that joie de vivre about him. You get the impression from minute one to minute 80, he just loves playing rugby league. You know, when you see other teams shutting games down, or other teams' halfbacks shutting games down when they think they've got it in the bag, Luke Gale wants to pile on the points, doesn't he? Because he's just full of rugby. And his enthusiasm is infectious, and I think he deserves the Man of Steel, in my opinion.
He's also one of these guys as well, to be honest, Adrian, isn't he? Where he's had to step back to move forward in his career, because he had that stint with Doncaster a few years ago where he had to go to Harlequins.
He's done it tough, hasn't he?
He has done it tough,
That's why he's not bothered about having his appendix out. Just get out there.
Sometimes it's about round pegs and round holes, isn't it? You know what I mean? You can find yourself somewhere that it just suits you. It just suits you, and Castleford and the way they play and the way they use Luke Gale, it just works perfectly. Perhaps in another setup, it might not work as well. That's the part of the alchemy and the mystery of sport. And I don't want to explain, because that's what I love about it. The inexplicable is one of the attractive parts about sport.
When it was announced he might not play again this season, I wonder how worried Wayne Bennett was.
Oh, I wonder whether a few phone calls will have gone into maybe Mark Snead. What, how are you fixed? Have you booked your holidays?
Yeah, you're kind of talking about the antithesis of Luke Gale there, aren't you, in Mark Snead? A very, very effective halfback, but kind of very different, whereas Gale is all rugby, passing and running and what have you. Snead is the ultimate control player. I'm not in any way criticising, by the way. He wins trophies for Hull, that sort of control. But he's the ultimate control player, fantastic kicking game. So you're not really swapping like for like. If you're thinking it's either Luke Gale or Mark Snead, I would question what your game plan is going to be, to be honest with you.
If there's one team that can beat Casper in their own patch at this same time, are you caught up with Justin Holbrook?
I did indeed. Justin, Mark Percival selected from St Helens in the Dream Team. Justified in your view?
Oh, definitely. I've said a few times this year since I've been here that Percy can do things on the field that not many can do, you know, if anyone else. He's got those special qualities that, as a fan, you want to see, you know. You're just not sure what you're going to get with him next. And, you know, he's still got a lot to improve on, he knows that. But as for those things I was talking about, you know, they come naturally to him, and that makes it, you know, great to be a part of watching him do that.
I thought perhaps there was one or two other Saints players who might have sneaked in there. It's a bolt and this is the way it goes. But I thought Alex Walmsley perhaps a little unlucky to miss out.
Oh, definitely. You know, I think he's shown in particular the last probably 6 or 8 weeks, you know, how important he is to our side. I think he's our next standing season, and he's hitting the, you know, his straps at the right end of the season. So he's been fantastic for us.
And I think if many of us were picking an all-time Super League dream team, James Robey would be in it. But to be fair, there's plenty of competition at number 9 in that for that spot.
Oh, there is. You know, I've said all along I'm a massive fan of James Robey. I think he's one of the best in the game. But in saying that, yeah, there's plenty of other good hookers. You know, Matt Parcells outstanding. You know, McShane's good at Castle. There's plenty of good ones. Houghton's good at Hull. So, look, there's plenty of good number 9s in the game at the moment. But, yeah, I wouldn't swap any of them for Robes.
Let's talk Thursday. Did you really believe that you could reach this point in the season when you first took over? Say, it weren't travelling that well, although they didn't do bad when you came over at the Magic weekend. But did you really think you had a realistic opportunity to make the semi-finals?
Honestly, did. I just thought, I just thought if we could put it all together and it's still building that way, that they're as good as anyone, you know, and just the players need a bit of self-belief and obviously to improve the way we're going, and we've done that, and I think we're as good a chance as any going in the semi-finals.
One of the areas that Saints have been strong throughout the season, in fact, if you look at the league table, been the strongest throughout the season, is defence. That's going to be tested this week.
Absolutely, yeah. No one asks more questions of your defence in Castleford, and we know that, and we'll prepare best for that. You know, we've got to be on our game the whole time. You know, you're slacking off for one play and they'll get you because of the strike that they got in their side. But in saying that, you know, I'm really confident. And as you said, we're now the best defensive side. And it's for a reason, because we're working really hard together, and we need to show that on Thursday.
That right-to-left shift of Castleford, no one seems to have quite mastered it this year. I think Saints have probably done as good a job as any, but that's where a lot of the threat comes from them.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, they move the ball so well, and it's very organised. It looks like they're just showing around, but everybody knows their job in that side, and they all know where to run and what time they're doing it, and you know, they've been doing that since November. So they're very well organised, but as I said, we'll be okay dealing with it.
You've pretty much known you were in the semi-final since you beat Salford last week, other than some kind of freak results for Wigan. What's the buzz been like amongst the players? They must be absolutely flying high at the moment, I would think.
Well, we've been that way for a while, yeah. Not over the top, you know. We've still got some belief that, you know, we want to win the competition. So, look, we're thrilled to be there, that's for sure. As you said, we didn't know until we had to beat Salford that last game. But we've been playing for a fair while like that, haven't we, where we've had to win our games. So, we're in a good position.
Selection headache or two this week? How's the squad looking in terms of fitness and injury?
Yeah, really good again. Yeah, so I'd say the same 19 as for the 17, not sure yet. I have made some changes and I'm well aware of that, but it's always been for a reason, and I've always picked the best 17 to beat whoever we're playing. So if that means another couple of changes, so be it. But look, whoever we pick, I'm sure will be, you know, do a great job and good enough to win.
Can Saints upset the apple cart and beat the Cass in their own ground?
They can. Cass are favourites, aren't they? They're at home. They rested a load of players this week, which is their prerogative, and that's they earned the right to do that. I dare say they'll cop criticism for it if they lose this week. But I don't wish to join in with the oft-quoted cliche of never write off the Saints, but I just haven't I? So you really can't write them off. Johnny Lomax, I suspect, will be back for Saints this week, and I was starting to like the look of that Lomax-Richardson-Barber triangle against Huddersfield a couple of weeks ago. That's what I expect Saints to go with, although Justin Holbrook was playing his cards pretty close to his chest in that interview, and that can threaten Castleford, and Saints have won at Castleford this year, and not many can say that.
I always say, with James Robey in your team, anything can happen.
Oh, Roby's a fantastic player, isn't he? A great servant to St. Helens. For me, still one of the top two or three hookers that are in the game over here. He just offers you so much around the play of the ball. He's very dynamic. He can be direct when he wants to be. Listen, he's brilliant. I think Eamon McManus was calling him a generation player as well, wasn't he, recently? Well,
if you were picking your all-time Super League dream team, I think he'd have to be your number 9, wouldn't he? And he'd probably still be my first choice for England as well. I know I've not picked him in the dream team. I'm using slightly different criteria for that. I'm not picking the team for the World Cup, but I'd still have him in my team for the World Cup, definitely.
Certainly got to be on the plane, hasn't he?
Oh, I would think so. Surely he's a shoo-in.
Well, the problem with that is, if you look at hooker, that's probably the single most competitive position in the team. You think you've got Houghton, you've got Hodgson, you've got Roby, you've got Clark, you've got McShane. There's a lot of people that are real high quality players all vying for that, well, maybe two positions in the team if you're going to rotate your nines.
Interesting to see where they go then when it does come up for selection.
Mm.
That game's a taste one between Castleford and St. Helens, but what a humdinger it's going to be the next night when Leeds take on the mighty Hull FC.
Oh, for me, this is just going to be a great game. It's got the makings of a classic, hasn't it?
Got to be, and this is probably suitable for the grand final itself.
Well, you could say that the other game would be between Castleford and St. Helens, with the St. Helens history with the grand final. But, Hull have got a record that's very good in big games over the last two or three years, haven't they? So, you know, Leeds have been there and done it. But
a little bit of a contrasting styles in this one as well. Leeds like a little bit of a looser game, don't they? Like an offload game and some second phase play. Hull like to batter the way down the field and use Mark Snead's kicking game to create opportunities for the likes of Mahe Fanua on the wing. When the two sides played each other in the Challenge Cup this year, I thought Hull was so superior to Leeds that day. I'm not saying that's going to be what happens on Friday night. I personally make Hull slight favourites, but Leeds look like they're going pretty well. But they're going to have to play a bit of rugby, and Hull don't let you play a lot of rugby.
Leeds will be hoping home advantage will count, and I cross it with Brian McDermott to get his thoughts on it.
No, they had a great season, Hull. Very good. And I think they're a very, very strong team at the moment. I think the fact that they've been involved in a Challenge Cup win this year, it gives them the knowledge of how to approach big games and win big games. So, yeah, they're clearly a threat.
Well, Leeds have that knowledge, and you've got home advantage, so will that count on the night?
It may have some bearing. I think I don't think we're going to go into there and base our prep on the fact we're playing at home. And I've said for years, every time we get in this situation, that what we've done in the past has very little bearing on the game in itself. You may have an advantage for some preparation, but it's not that big a deal.
Where do you think the game's going to be won or lost?
I think Hull's forward pack and their kick return players, I think how many wins they get and how many quick play the balls they get and how many times we get penalised for stopping them from trying to play the ball quick is going to be key.
And obviously the home crowd is going to be a key to success, to get behind the boys as well.
Yeah, for sure. They've been brilliant, our crowd, and they were great all the way through a tough season last year. We've had a better season this year and they've been great again. And very looking forward to playing at home.
We've got the dream team. Matt Parcells in the team. He's had a great season, hasn't he?
Yeah, he's been very good. He's been a fantastic signing. He himself has had an individual has a great season, but I think the standout thing for him is that we play so well with him. We've got three or four individuals that are reliant on him playing well. So, you know, the cohesion we have offensively when he's in the team is great.
Just one player, do you think there might have been places for one or two more Leeds representatives?
Nah, I'm not sure. I've not looked at the dream team. I don't know who the makeup is, but I know there's a bit of a cast of a contingency, and you can't argue with that either.
Is there ever a guy who's been there and done it? He knows how to win the big games.
Oh, he does. I mean, I know he's caught for some criticism during his time as boss of Leeds, but you've got to look at his record. His record speaks for itself, hasn't it?
It does. Don't forget, Leeds were in the qualifiers last year, having finished down at the bottom of the league, so that's a turnaround, isn't it? I know we were all surprised that we're in the qualifiers. It was a bit of one of the shocks of the season in 2016, but they've turned that around. Not done a whole lot of recruitment, by the way, in the close season, so they've not exactly completely renewed the team. I think there'll be a lot of emotion around Headingley on Friday night, because, of course, Rob Burrow and Danny Maguire will be playing their last games in front of the Headingley crowd, so I don't think Leeds need an extra incentive. Getting to a grand final is more than incentive enough, but I'm sure they'll be doubly delighted if they can do it for Danny Maguire and Rob Burrow.
It's going to be weird watching Headingley without the south stand. It's a pile of rubble at the minute, it's gone.
Yeah, a few touch judges might be quite relieved that it's a pile of rubble at the moment. probably makes refereeing and touch judging Friday night's game a little bit easier. But it's going to be a massive game. I couldn't predict the winner of that one, but if you forced me, and I can see that you are doing, yes. I'll take Hull.
Okay, let's hear from possibly the winning coach in Lee Radford. Lee Radford, a Leeds and Hull game is a big enough game in itself, but we've watched riding on it. It's massive.
It is, yeah, and a huge challenge for us as well. Like, we've not won at Headingley in 10 years, so I'm very aware of how difficult Friday night's going to be. But really looking forward to Friday. You know, we've strived towards this game all season, and now it's finally upon us. We know we're 80 minutes away from walking out at Old Trafford, and that's a game that everybody's really excited about.
Your focus is on yourself and what you make of Leeds.
Yeah, they're consistent again. They had a real off year last year, and I think there were some circumstances that caused that, but I think they're back on track obviously now, and back to doing what Leeds do best, and that's winning games of rugby league. So we're aware of how challenging that's going to be on Friday, but as I've said, the group's looking forward to it. We was 5 minutes away from getting to a grand final last year. We'll go one better this time round.
Proved by winning the Challenge Cup, you can win the big game, so will that come into play on Friday?
I hope so. I just hope the level of execution that we've shown in knockout rugby has been high for us, so I'm hoping that's exactly the same again on Friday. Last Friday against Castleford, I thought we was thought was fantastic, ball in hand, and the level of execution was really high. So we'll need to take that into Friday's game.
Have you got any injuries to worry about ahead of the game?
Not fully fit squad, so I'd like to thank my S&C staff and my physio department. I've got the luxury, unfortunately, of telling a lot of blokes they're not playing, but to have everybody ready, obviously, for Friday's a real big rugby pat on the back for them.
We're at the Dream Team launch of the event, two representatives. Them two have had two great seasons.
Yeah, and Maher in particular, it's his second year in the Dream Team as well, so he got there last year. They've been really consistent for us throughout the year, but I just think they've got that little bit of X factor about what they do as well, and obviously that catches the eyes of the public that vote for the Dream Team. So hopefully they'll be at their very best come Friday.
Yeah, the cup holders, does that put a bit of extra pressure on you guys to get the job done?
No, I think the fact that we was in this position last year and didn't take that opportunity, I think that just pumps up the want this coming Friday, and hopefully we'll see that in the performance.
One final question, how's married life?
Yeah, I'm still married, so that's that's a real plus. It's been 4 weeks now and she's still not got rid of me, so I'm doing something right.
Yeah, the cup holders, but there's going to be some pressure on them, surely.
Yeah, there is going to be some pressure. Obviously, I suppose in a similar sort of respect to Castleford, they've got to prove that they can perform in a big game again. But I don't know, I just think that it's almost like a perfect storm at the moment with the way that this squad has come together at Hull, where everybody complements each other. You've got Jamie Shaw at the back who just snipes and gets on the ends of things if there's a half break in the middle or at any point on the field. They've got two brutes for wingmen. The centres are as big as some teams' props in this division. They're big all across the field, aren't they? And with lads like Mark Minicello as well, who always seems to do the rough, tough stuff that doesn't get commented about. I don't know, I fancy Hull.
Yeah, so do I. We're coming into the end of summer rugby, aren't we? I mean, it's every chance we'll get rain this weekend and probably rain for the grand final. We usually do. You'd have to say, from just what you said there, Parky, that Hull are pretty suited to wet weather rugby, you would have thought. They've got an absolutely enormous team. I don't think they watch videos of players. I think they just weigh them and then decide to sign them, and that's what they do. And they've got a method that works brilliantly for them. They've got Snead's kicking game, which is even more important when it comes around to wet weather rugby. Just a very difficult team to beat. And that little bit of something extra from Kelly and Shaw that can sneak them a try when they need one.
I understand what you're saying, John, and what you're saying as well. But I always think, I think about Hull this season. I think they've learned from what happened to them last season after the Challenge Cup. When they didn't win a game.
I would agree, yeah, but again, is that not part of the development? I mean, we spoke about the development of London Scholars, for example, earlier on in the show. Is that not part of Hull's whole development, where the fact that they've learned to manage the situation? They always say you've got to walk 10 miles in somebody else's shoes to understand it. They've been in that position before and they've learned from it.
I'm sure it was a learning curve for them, and right from the semi-final of the Challenge Cup almost, Lee Radford has been saying that he didn't want the season to tail off, that's the expression I need, tail off in the way that it did last season. So they won the Challenge Cup, and Lee Radford was straight away saying, okay, we might have a week here where we have a good time, but we're not going to let the season tail off in the spectacular way that it did in 2016, and I think they've been true to the word on that. And here they are, they're 80 minutes from the grand final now. They can forget the Challenge Cup. That was 4 weeks ago or whatever it was. It's semi-final of Super League time now, and they've got the firepower to win the game, no doubt about it.
Hard to believe he's been in the job now 5 years. That's a long time for a whole coach.
Well, yeah, I think he's been under pressure for about four and a half of those, hasn't he? There's been a couple of guys wandering round wherever Hull have gone, saying Radford out and got the banners. He's been having pressure even longer than Arsene Wenger over at Arsenal.
There's a couple of guys at every club every time they lose three games saying they want the coach out, Dave. You know that. That's the way. That's the modern world. People have got memories about half an hour long, haven't they? So I was talking to someone at the Dream Team launch today who was telling me that Castleford have had some stick on social media when they've not played well this year, which is about twice. I think we've almost got to grow up and sort of ignore that sort of stuff and let people get on with it.
The thing is, it's sport, isn't it? You're always going to have a winner. You're always going to have a loser.
Unfortunately, that's the case. And for the fans that do lose, they get miffed and roll up the banners, get rid of the coach.
I think we've just got to roll with the punches now. I mean, that's not going away, that is it? I don't think social media is going away anytime soon. So you've just got to grow a thick skin, and especially if you're a player or a coach, because they're either overpraising you or over-criticising you, one of the two. There are no middle ground. There's no middle ground for most fans, is there? They're either, you're either a hero or a villain. And I personally would take no notice.
All to play for. I've got the £1 million game, and then we've got the shootout to see who gets to Old Trafford. Exciting times ahead.
Very exciting. Can't wait. Bring them on.